The seventh sutra. Regard earnestly all the life that surrounds you. Regard the constantly changing and moving life which surrounds you, for it is formed by the hearts of men. And as you learn to understand their constitution and meaning, you will by degrees be able to read the larger world of life. Reverence for life. Regard for life. Ordinarily, the so-called religious are life negative. They are against life. Look at their faces. Look at their eyes. They are condemning everything. This negativeness has created a life denial all over the earth. And religion became or appeared to become an ally for death, then a friend for life. It appears that religion is against life because it goes on constantly telling you, leave life, transcend it, move to some other life which is beyond. And God seems to be against that you should be in life. And life has been taken as a punishment. You are here because you sinned. You will not be here if there was no sin in your life. But all these attitudes are ill and pathological. Really, the divine and this life are not two things, rather extension of one phenomenon. Here and there, this and beyond, are not two things. Really, this here, this life is a step towards that. And if you deny it, you will not reach the other. You cannot go beyond. To go beyond this, no denial is needed. To go beyond this, a deep insight into this life is needed. And how to create a deep insight into life? Unless you have a reverence, it is impossible. River life, wherever you find it, help it to grow. Be creative towards it. Don't be destructive. But we are in many ways destructive. Look around you. Everything that is deeply connected with life is condemned. Sex is condemned. Love is condemned. Because they are the source of life. A person who is religious must be a monk, a celibate. Why? Why a seeker for the divine should be celibate? What is the need? Why so much anti-propaganda against sex, against love, against life? Because sex seems to be the source of this world. Sex seems to be the original energy which moves this world. Those who are against it, they are bound to be against sex. Cut sex completely from your life. That is their teaching. But if you cut sex, you cut all life. And if you are against sex, you cannot river life. You have gone against life itself. These sutras are very meaningful. They say river life in all its forms. Because the more you have the reverence, the deeper you can move. And God is not really beyond, but rather within this life. God is the center, the very center, and the life is just the periphery. Move deeply in life, and you will reach to the very center, the very ground of life itself. God is not the creator. He is the very creativity. Christian concepts about God the creator have created much confusion. And those attitudes are a little childish. Good if you are telling to children, but nonsense if you're talking to persons of understanding. It appears from the Christian and Mohammedan dogmas that God created the world somewhere in the past. He created the world in 6 days, and then on the seventh he relaxed, and after that he has not done anything. Then the world started running on its own. This concept gives a divisive attitude. God and the world are two different things. That's not true. God has not created the world and made it separate from himself. It is not like a painter. A painter paints a picture, then the painter is different and the picture is different. The Hindu concept is deeper. Hindus say God is not like a painter, but rather like a dancer. Shiva the dancer. Like a dancer, because dance and dancer are not two. You cannot separate. The painter can be separated from the painting, but the dancer cannot be separated from his dance. Dancer and dancing are one. So God is not the creator as a separate entity. God is the very creativity, the very life. And if you are against life, you are against God. Gurdjieff is reported to have said somewhere, a very paradoxical statement but very true. He has said that the so-called religions are all against God, because they are against life. Authentic religiousness is always for life, never against it. Because if you move deeper in the dance, you will reach to the dancer. The dance is just the form. If you move deeper in the dance, you will reach to the very heart of the dancer. If you move deep in life, you will reach to the life originating principle, God. God is creativity. Or, if you allow me to say, I would like God is the very existence itself. God is life. Jesus has said, God is love. And that was one of the reasons he was crucified. Because he called God love, and love is the condemned thing, the sin, and he called God the love, he must have looked very rebellious, and he must have looked too much for this life on the earth. The old Jewish mind, the old religious mind couldn't tolerate. This is sacrilege. Jesus talking about God in terms of love. God is beyond life and love. You must leave all life, love, everything, and then only you can find him. And this man, Jesus, brings God to the earth. And he talks in terms of love. Really, God is life, God is love, God is this very world. Don't create a division. Don't create a dualism. Only then you can revere life. And whenever you see life anywhere, a seed is sprouting, a tree flowering, a star moving, a river flowing, a child laughing. Remember, the God is near you. When a child laughs, look at the laughter. Enter into it. You have entered the very temple. When the river flows, watch lovingly. Be one with its flow. Be with a deep reverence. Hindus have made all the rivers goddesses. They have made all the hills deities. They have made the earth holy. It is one of the most beautiful things that has happened in the human consciousness. Hindus call Ganges mother. This is reverence for life. Hills they call gods. This is reverence for life. They worship trees. And those who have become intellectually sophisticated, they think they are stupid, superstitious people. They are not. The tree is not the thing. When they are worshipping a tree or a river, they are worshipping life. And the tree is more alive than any temple, than any church. And the river is more alive than any mosque. Your stone idols in the temples are dead. A tree is more alive. You may be superstitious, but the person who is worshipping the tree is not. He may not be aware what he is doing, but he is revering. A deep reverence for life is there in all the forms. A deep respect. And celebrate. Wherever you feel life is growing, celebrate it. Love it. Welcome it. And a great transformation will happen to you. Because if life is revered in all its forms, you become more alive. You become more receptive to life. And life begins to flow in you abundantly. It overflows you. That's what bliss is, life overflowing. But you are more interested in death. You are less interested in life. More interested in destruction, in hate. More interested in wars than in love, than in life. And that makes you dull and dead. Before really you are dead so many times. When death really occurs to you, you are already dead. Whatsoever you revere, you will become. If you revere life, you will become life and more life. If you revere death, you will become death and more death. Remember this. Regard the constantly changing and moving life which surrounds you, for it is formed by the hearts of men. And as you learn to understand their constitution and meaning, you will by degrees be able to read the larger world of life. 8th Sutra, learn to look intelligently into the hearts of men. Study the hearts of men that you may know what is that world in which you live and of which you will to be a part. We never look directly into anyone's heart. It is dangerous, insecure, because then you may be involved. Then you may have to do something. So we never touch anyone. We just remain aloof, far away, removed. We move without touching anyone. And when I say this, this is not only physically, psychologically also. We move without touching anyone. Physically also, we are very much afraid that we should not touch anyone. Anyone should not touch us. Psychologically also, we live in a cell, enclosed, encapsulated. This is for some reasons. Because if you penetrate into somebody's heart, you will have to do something. Because then you will be filled with love. Then you will be filled with higher, superior values. And then you cannot remain so mean as you are. Then you cannot remain so unkind as you are. Then you cannot remain so self-centered as you are. If you look in the heart of the other, you will have to melt. The very looking into the heart of the other will become merging of your ego. So no one looks at anyone. Not even we look in the hearts of our friends. We take them taken for granted. Even we never look at the heart of our wives and husbands and lovers and beloveds. We create an image and we live with the image. We never talk to each other directly. Because if you talk directly, you don't feel safe. You become vulnerable. Remember this, if you penetrate into anyone's heart, simultaneously your own heart becomes vulnerable. Because otherwise is not possible. If I look deeply in you, I am available to you. You can look deeply in me. And that is also dangerous. I would not like anyone to look deeply in me. Because on the surface I am different, a false person. Deep down I am different. On the surface I go on smiling, very kind, very loving. And deep down much hatred is there. Much ugliness is there. I would not like anyone to penetrate within me. But if I penetrate in you, simultaneously the very effort to penetrate you makes me available to you. Then we are afraid. We won't like anyone to trespass. Look into ourselves. So it is better not to look anyone. Not to look in anyone's heart. And not be looked by anyone. So we become encapsulated, dead. Go on moving with an imprisoned cell. How can you know life then? If even a human heart is strange to you and you have not looked into it, how can you move deeply into the greater heart of the divine, the very center of existence? Learn it. From human beings we learn to look deeply. And only the heart is the thing in which you can look deeply. It is the depth. The depth of the person is his heart. We talk through the minds. That is not the depth. The mind is on the surface. On the periphery. We talk, we discuss, we communicate only with words. We never remain silent even for a few minutes. Even those who are in love, They will also go on talking constantly, because if you are silent, the heart can be penetrated. So go on talking, go on talking. The husband comes to the home, he starts talking. Nonsense, irrelevant things. What happened in the market? What happened in the shop? What was in the news? What has come on the radio? He goes on talking. And the wife also goes on talking what other wives are talking around the house. They go on talking, they go on talking, unless they fall asleep. Why so much talking? What is the purpose of it? Really, are they interested to communicate something? No. They are afraid to communicate. If they are silent, then their hearts will start communicating. So they go on talking. Talking creates a barrier. Mind to mind, they meet, so that heart to heart, they should not meet. Because heart to heart, meeting is possible only in silence. This is the way we are living. And then we say we are living in misery. What else is possible? Misery will be your fate. But it is not destiny. It is your own created misery. It is you who have created it. Encapsulated, you will be in misery. Open, vulnerable, you will become capable to be blissful. This opening is to be learned through reaching to the hearts of others. This sutra says, learn to look intelligently into the hearts of man. Intelligence is impartial. No man is your enemy. No man is your friend. All alike are your teachers. Your enemy becomes a mystery that must be solved, even though it takes ages, for man must be understood. Your friend becomes a part of yourself, an extension of yourself, a riddle hard to reach. The sutra says, learn to look intelligently. By intelligently is meant, be impartial. If you are partial, you cannot reach to the heart. All partiality focuses you in the mind. Only impartial consciousness comes to the heart. The heart is impartial. The mind is always partial. The mind is always party-bound, sectarian, for this and against that. The heart is neither for nor against. The heart is simply an opening, a receiving, a welcoming. It has no enemies and no friends. Only the mind has enemies and friends. By intelligence is meant impartiality. Only then you are intelligent. If you are partial, you are not intelligent. You may appear so. You may be sophisticated, educated, logical, but not wise, not really intelligent. Intelligence has the quality of no prejudice, no partiality, no feeling for and against, because only then you can look at the whole. For example, if I say that you are my friend, then it will be impossible for me to enter your heart. If I say you are my enemy, then too it will be impossible to reach your heart. Because when I say you are my friend, I have taken you for granted. Obviously, I understand that I have understood you. Otherwise, how friendship is possible? And when I say you are my friend, I show my likings. I say I like you. When I say I like you, I have become partial. Then I cannot reach your heart. My liking will become a barrier. When I say I like you, really I am imposing myself upon you. My likings. I say you are good because you are according to my liking. Now I have entered in you. I have imposed myself upon you. I cannot reach your heart. I cannot know as you are because of my liking. When I say you are my enemy, I say I don't like you. I dislike you. This dislike becomes a barrier. When I say I like you, I will try to find out things which I like. When I say I dislike you, I will try to find out things which I dislike. Then I am just trying to prove myself, not trying to know you as you are. Liking, friendship, disliking, enmity are my interpretations, my fictions. Your naked facticity is forgotten. Intelligence means you are neither my friend nor my enemy. You are you. I am I. I am not going to impose myself upon you. And now I will try to understand what you are. Not my like and dislike, but what you are. And every man is a mystery. Every man is a riddle. And if you can try to solve even one single individual, if you are capable to solve even one single riddle, you will have become capable of much more. Because even one individual is understood through heart. You have come to know the art, how to penetrate into the heart. And the same technique, and the same method will help you to penetrate into the divine heart. Because the divine heart is greater, infinite, but the human heart is a glimpse of it. The human heart is a fragment of it, alive. So don't be dead towards humanity around you. Love it, revere it, and learn to look intelligently into the hearts of men. This learning will make you more mature. This learning will make you more sensitive towards a higher learning, which is the divine. The heart of the divine can be penetrated only by those who have become capable of knowing human heart what it is.